This three-month lecture series dovetails into the three-month lecture series at the Philosophic Research Society. There, the 13 lectures are on science and our spirit, and here the 13 lectures are on the science as the culmination of a two-year program. In the Thursday night, the theme is that there is the most precarious of all ideas to realize in science. And our generation is the generation that must realize this idea in our minds and to be able to carry the talismanic meaning energy of this idea into our lives and to make sure that it is given to persons, places, and things. We have to, in a word, baptize inanimate objects with our love and understanding in order to secure for them an energy potential that will carry the new dimension that has already arrived but has no place to be. In other words, the New Age began about 200 years ago but hasn't had any place to be. And it's getting rather tired of being a homeless phantom on this planet and needs to have place to be. And so there is a sacral element in science that is a spiritual phenomenon. Now on the Thursday night series, there is, in order to carry the idea that must be realized, there is the theme that we have two distinct levels happening, one on the mythic level and the second one on the historical level. On the mythic level, the manifestation is to have a planetary culture instead of a tribal culture, or instead of a national culture, or an ethnic culture, to have a planetary culture. This is a sociological phenomenon. It's an anthropological phenomenon. It occurs on the mythic level. We need to tell stories from all over the planet to the same persons so that we evolve a planetary culture. But because of the nature of man's mind, we cannot have a planetary civilization. We must have a larger form than the culture in order to forestall man's egotistical tendencies. And so the civilization is not a planetary civilization, but is some larger form. Now, the first candidate for a larger form would be an interplanetary civilization. But the fact is, already by 1989, and this is like very early on, already we have sent from our planetary base electronic amplifications of our senses, especially in the figure of Voyager 2, so that every planet in this star system is already incorporated mythically into the planetary culture, so that our planetary culture takes all of the objects and bodies that are in our star system. So that if you wanted to give a designation to the new culture, you could use the name of our star as the appropriate name for this emerging culture. In other words, it's not an Earth culture, but it is a solar culture. And you can see how accurate and consonant that term is with the very beginnings of civilization, the archaic early Egyptian civilization, the early Mideast civilization, a solar culture, so that it doesn't just mean some metaphysical speculation. It isn't an anachronistic going back to archaic times, but it's very exact and truthful that it means that we have a planetary culture which includes all of the bodies around this star, our sun. The name of our sun is Sol. That's why solar. So that the culture that is coming out now is a culture around a single star and its complete system. And all of the planets, all of the satellites, all of the bodies from the sun out to the Oort cloud, which is well beyond the outer orbit of Pluto, the source of comets and so forth, all of this will become a single entity and capable of being integrated into a single symbol. And the single symbol will be our star, our sun. So that in a way there'll be a consonance between the self as an inner star, a guiding star, and our star, Sol. All of this can be integrated on the symbolic level. It's an enormous task. It will take some time to do, but it can be done. But other than this, different from this, is an other process which is equally characteristic of human beings. We do not just integrate, we also differentiate. And a civilization is built on the differentiation, not on the integration. A culture is based on the integration. It's what a culture holds people together, holds processes together, has a central point, as it were, a synthesizing symbol, if you like. But equal to that integrative, symbolizing nature, ritual, myth, symbol, ecology, is a whole second ecology, which is complementary to the first. And instead of bringing all together in an integration, it talismanically spreads everything apart differentially. A civilization is built on the differentiation process. So that a civilization is what we would colloquially call consciousness in all of its forms and all of its operations. What is the number one process of consciousness? To differentiate. What is the number one process in a natural ecology? To integrate. Nature seeks to come together, to manifest, to become form. And man, as a part of nature, achieves form and achieves an interiority to the point of self-realization. But this other process also is there, consciousness. If you look through, for instance, any work by Carl Jung in the 20-some volumes, you will see him constantly reminding us, like a string around our finger. To understand consciousness, one must ask, what is the goal? What is the purpose? Why is this happening? For what end does this occur? And always the answer is not for some objective achievement, but for the process of differentiation. Differentiation itself is the goal of consciousness, to differentiate. Now, it's not exactly the same as analysis. It's parallel to analysis. Differentiation is not only analysis. There are other analog functionings which are not collected under the aegis of the understanding of the notion of analysis. And we'll get to some of that hopefully today. So that while we are at the beginnings of being able to participate now in making a planetary culture, there is a second process which is historical as opposed to mythic. The planetary culture is a mythos, a mature mythos, which cannot be scrapped, cannot be thrown away, cannot be leapt over, cannot be seen ideationally and then dismissed because there's something else yet again to do. It must be done. We have to have the rituals, we have to have the myths, we have to have the integration. We need that. So we're developing, finally developing a planetary culture, but an interstellar civilization. Now, it makes no difference that movement beyond our star system is just physically impossible at the present time, within reason. To get to the Centauri star system would take roughly 40,000 years at our best technology right now. That's irrelevant. Consciousness must have a challenge large enough, subtle enough, comprehensive enough to draw the differentiation purpose out to its fullest possibility. So therefore, you must have in consciousness a goal which is beyond you. Hence, you cannot compute a straight line to that goal, but you realize that you have to develop in order to even be able to get there, so that differentiation is built into the objective process. In differentiation on the level of aspiration. We know we need to go, but we need to grow before we can even go. That's the key to the whole thing. So the idea of an interstellar civilization is absolutely essential as the complement to a planetary culture. Now, this is a very powerful idea. It's very difficult to realize why these two go together. It took me more than 30 years to realize that the two must go together. And it was only on the basis of being able to develop this educational process accurately enough, of seeing what the exact sequence was between phase and stage in their accurate sequence, to realize that the line of history myth balances out with an interstellar civilization and a planetary culture. The planetary culture being all of the bodies around our star. So in a sense, one could symbolize our planetary culture by our star, by Sol. Hence, it is really a solar culture that is coming to be. But an interstellar civilization, that is the long range objective. Only with this kind of double whammy, as it were, is man going to be able to live with himself. If he does not achieve the developing elan of these two qualities, he will turn upon himself in all of his fidgety ingenuity and erase himself from the path of light. There's absolutely no doubt about that. It isn't a question of probabilities. There's no doubt at all. It's a certainty. It's a waterfall at the end of the river that we're on, and we can hear the falls. There's absolutely no doubt. There's no chance to avoid it other than making this fundamental transformation, what is the fundamental transformation? To aspiringly leave the normal flow of history and to go to a higher key. All of the songs that can be played in this key now lead to death. It's not because the universe is malign or that man is malign. It's that he's ready to move to a new key. And the universe says, when you are ready, you must go then. You must leave behind. You can't remain a dinosaur forever. Now you've got to become a bird. All the dinosaurs are going to go, but the birds will flourish. Man is now a planetary being, whether he likes it or not. Some of us feel rather comfortable with that. Others, as you know, as you talk to them, feel very uncomfortable. They still cherish some ethnocentricity, some racial preciousness, some national precociousness. All of those have to be let go. Not in the sense of effacing them, but letting go in the sense of allowing them to integrate together. Which is why the United States is such a real beacon light. There's no such thing, technically, as an American other than the American Indians. Everyone is from someplace else. And it's only because we live together here that we can call ourselves Americans. None of us can go back any further than about 8 or 9 generations at the most. My daughter's people can go back some 25,000 years. But there aren't many people like that. So it's an issue that the United States has a very peculiar beacon-like quality. It's a prism of the new world in the sense that it's a meeting point, not a melting pot, not making a stew, but it's an integration on a level where all humanity is welcome. All traditions are welcome. So the United States, in a way, is a prototype. It's a sketch, a very good sketch. It's an architect's rendering of the planetary culture, of the solar culture. And in fact, this was understood from the very beginning. This was understood by Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson from the very beginning. And if you look at the back of the $1 bill, you can see, just like a cassette has two circles, there are two circles on the back of the dollar bill. And in one of these circles, the left-hand circle, you can see the Masonic pyramid, and the top of the pyramid, the top block, is an eye. It's not put on the top of the pyramid with masonry. It's put on the top of the pyramid only by virtue of its ability to see. So the top of the pyramid is the ability to envision. And on the other side, you will see the eagle with the arrows and the laurel. But above it, you will see that kind of star cluster, which shows here is the planetary culture. Here is the interstellar, interstar, the clustering of many stars together, the symbolic notion of many stars already here 200 years ago. And on the other side, if you hold it up, you can see that it's the third element, the portrait of George Washington, as a symbol, that it takes an individual person to make these two viable together. Because these two, the pyramid and the eagle with the star cluster above it, And it's a radiant William Blake-like star cluster. I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but it's there. These two disks only occur in consciousness, so that there must be someone there who has that consciousness for them to occur. They can only manifest in the consciousness of someone. So that the individual is the key to the whole process in this differentiation ecology. So that the thrust then is not only for consciousness to differentiate, but to differentiate on the immediate basis of the individual. And again, taking Jung as an indication, if you look through Jung's works, you find two words always there: differentiation and individuation. And they're always talked about together. They're the two hands of consciousness. There must be differentiation, but there must be differentiation on the basis of individuation. Now, if you follow this in some kind of strict logical ordering, you will discover that this is a polarity. That to differentiate and to individuate seem to be contrary processes. And indeed, were they to occur separately, they would be exact contraries. But the hermetic transformation secret is that when you do both processes together, they do not polarize, but they form a very strong unity. When you do them together, it's like two hemispheres that originally turned the other way in a mutually exclusive polarity. But when you work and engender them together, the two spheres come together, and the more that you work with them, the more they hermetically seal into a single sphere. So the key was always, in the esoteric tradition, to differentiate and individuate together. But the key there, the esoteric key, is that both processes must be done at the same pace, at the same time. If you lose your balance, one or the other comes to dominate, and you do not get a good seal. You do not get hermetically sealed. And those spheres fall apart. They will not hold. But a sphere which is hermetically sealed in the right way, you cannot pull apart. It's as strong as an atomic structure. In other words, there is a way to make persons and societies so that they are hermetically sealed and they're as permanent as atoms in this level of reality. There is no way to destroy that kind of integration except to go to the fractionating energies that are required to go subatomic. So that the profound idea that needs to be realized by our generation culminates itself in this phase of development, this eighth stage in our educational program known as science. Now, in human history, there have been several times when man has broached science, and each time he has failed. In the Hellenistic classical world, in the archaic Egyptian world, in the Sung dynasty of China, in the 14th century of our era of Islam, even in the Mesoamerican civilizations by about the 6th century of our era, no human group has been able to sustain itself in science at all. Now, we are in a sustaining pattern, but the sustaining pattern is held by just a few individuals. You could barely fill this room with people who are alive now, who are able to sustain in a permanent way the level at which we actually can live. What is the solution? What is the way to attack this problem? The maturation capacity must be taught to tens of millions of people within the next 20, 25 years. We might have 30 years on the outside, but I doubt it. Why? Because there is an atrophying of capacity that happens. There's the right moment. It's like a launch window. And as the time goes past that launch window, it becomes less and less propitious, becomes more difficult to do, becomes very precarious. We have about until 2010, about 2010, before we begin to enter into a very, very precarious situation. And it's rather doubtful that much beyond 2015 or 2020 on the very outside, that this could be accomplished in any kind of a reasonable way. Jung himself, in his visions when he died in 1961, saw that 50 years after his death would come a catastrophic barrier for mankind. And that would be 2011. And I think the old Carl Jung was a good enough magician and scientist and visionary to see things pretty accurately. It's important then that in our consideration, when we're talking about this material, that you have an inner eye and an inner ear to see and hear the civilization beyond the planetary cultural talk. It's difficult enough to see this science material in terms of the planetary culture, but you must also stretch yourselves, make the differentiation attempt to let occur to you the higher resonance, that of the interstellar civilization, and not to let that higher resonance be channeled down into a reductive parallel. Now, this is the archetypal problem that's happening in our time and has happened now since the late 1940s and is happening more and more. The reductive parallelism is taking the mythic energy integration patterns and projecting them unconsciously on the historical process, on the differentiation process, on the individuation process. No one who is doing this can catch themselves and stop themselves from doing this. Once you are caught in this, you need someone else to hold the mirror up to get you out. And there is almost an epidemic now in the higher levels of the psyche of sensitive people of carrying the mythic integrative energies subconsciously projected into the historical processes, which will mean that we will not have this interstellar civilization, which means that even if we achieve a planetary culture, it will become demonic. Instead of uniting man, it will tyrannize man. And I, for one, don't want to leave a world where our children and grandchildren have to figure out ways to beat a planetary tyranny. That's a hell of a thing to leave other human beings with. That is a real problem. About the only way that you can handle tyranny on that level is to introduce a self-destruct tendency into the culture itself. And even if that were effective, you can see that would have catastrophic effects. When the Hermetic tradition went underground in 365 AD, within 50 years, the classic Western civilization was on a self-destruct level. And within another 50 years, it was just simply unable to operate. When the Hermetic tradition went underground, signaled by the burying of the Nag Hammadi material in Egypt, because you can no longer publicly read this kind of, they would be killed. They don't argue with you anymore. At that level, you are just simply killed. The energy level fell, plummeted so fast that the Vandals under Alaric were able to sack Rome in 410, something that had not happened for all over 800 years. Alaric was no great general. It's that the diseased level of classical civilization left it so vulnerable and weak because the psychic energy was gone. Stone walls don't keep people out. It's the health of the psyche that keeps the form viable. And once that's taken away, the protective, the amulet quality plummets. So 45 years after the Hermetic tradition withdrew from the civilization, people packed up their bags and went off silently on their own way by ones and twos. There was no more Hermetic energy in Western civilization. And within 45 years, Rome was sacked and it was never again the same. It was just a simple, long slide into what we used to call the Dark Ages, and now everyone's trying to make a nice, sweet metaphor over it. Between 410 and the First Crusade, 600 years later, you would be hard-pressed to name 12 human beings in 600 years. I don't mean just you, anybody would be hard-pressed to name 12 human beings. I mean professors. It's like that. When the energy is stolen, and remember that one of the characteristics of a Hermetic master is that he's a master thief. Hermes the thief. Did you not know that? There's a book by Norman O'Brown, the great classicist, called Hermes the Thief. The mythic image of Hermes is that he is a master thief, among other things. Well, it took just 45 years the last time before there was just no health left in the civilization. Notice, the culture sinks to a low level where it can operate, but the civilization crumbles and vanishes. The culture survives on a low level, the lowest common denominator. But the civilization does not survive at all. We're in that kind of a situation where the nascent interstellar civilization would not survive at all. And our culture would go to the lowest common denominator. What is the lowest common denominator? Money. A purely utilitarian, highly vicious, opportunistic, monetary culture. And we're very close to that, too. Very close to that. If you ask an expert economist what the nature of money is, they will tell you. Money has a mind of its own. It goes where it can increase itself or defend itself. Those are the only two aspects that money is concerned with. Even on a social moray level, that's not sufficient to live. And of course, it's completely extraneous to an ethical level for human beings who are spirits. So you can see that what we're working with here currently is a very complicated situation, that to think about science by itself, to think about our current civilization, our current culture, to think about all of these ideas by itself is literally impossible to do, because there's no real context within which the Herculean forms that are required of us to conceive can be conceived. That's why this educational process is perfect hermetic cure. This is psychochemical medicine, because it provides the context at the same time as it provides the insight into the problem. And if they're handled right, if they mature together, if the context of the problem and the engendering of the problem occur together, there's a very peculiar transformation that happens. The problem solves itself. Why? Because the solution to every problem is in the problem itself. The cure for the disease is in the disease itself. Every Asclepian hermetic master understands this principle. So that you let the problem occur, but to occur in its own context, it solves itself. You don't have to apply or look for some outside power to get it, but you let its development in a slow way mature into its own context, so that the context and the problem occurring together, there is no problem per se. It's just that element of the context occurs along with all the other elements. You can see, I hope that you can see, how esoteric this strategy is. It's the strategy that the Buddha used. It's the strategy that the I Ching employs. And in each case, you can see that there is an eight quality, a double quaternary, that comes into play. The Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Plan, the eight trigrams, the 64 hexagrams. That the 64 hexagrams correlate to 64 forms of DNA. All of this is exactly accurate, and it's a way of checking yourself and making sure that you are on what is called the path. Notice that the path is not anything in itself, but the path occurs when you have done all of the contextual exactly right. What is left open by that activity, that's the path. It's the same way in which energy works in this reality. Electromagnetic energy does not follow some kind of like little beaded path, like an ant trail, but it flows when an openness is made by a non-conducting context, so that you can shape the non-conducting context, and the resulting openness is the path for the electromagnetic energy. It's the same thing as in Chinese medicine. There are no meridians in the human body. The meridians are an idea in consciousness of the path that the neural energy takes. But you do not find little pathways in the human body. What you find are the non-conducting corridors along which and in the vacant center of which the neural energy flows. So that the principle that's here is not to look for the map, but to train yourself to see the terrain in such a way that the roots disclose themselves out of the invisible, out of the what is not there. That's why one has to take the context from its natural basis. And I've tried for a long time to cut it down to less than 2 years, and I can't do it. Maybe somebody else sometime can do it. I can't find any way to cut any more out and still leave enough there for it to be effective. The best I can do is 2 years. But I do know that if you follow this way, it will work. Not because I say it works. The reason I say it works is I've seen it work. I know it works. Not just for me. I've taught a lot of people. People that you would hardly think on first meeting would be capable. But that's the charm and beauty of it. It works because it follows universal principle, universal process. It works just like the veracity of electromagnetic energy working. So I have prepared this little mandala. We need now an exfoliate symbol. Not a synthesizing symbol, but an exfoliating, an unfolding symbol. And if you want, you can paste this up someplace, like a wanted poster. And you can stare at it. Here is one for you. What's wanted here? The most wanted person is you, your inner self. In fact, I've even thought of having it done up as a wanted poster. Wanted. Reward. Immortality. You. With the bandoleros over the yogi, you know. I'm still a creature of Berkeley, as you can see. In this mandala, I've put all of it together except for the invisible lines. Now, there are two matrices of invisible lines which you can write in for yourself, but I'm not putting on the page. If you connect history with nature, and nature with myth, myth with magic, and magic with history, if you connect those with lines, you will see a diamond shape. That's the Vajra, friends. The diamond shape. And if you connect science with ritual, and ritual with symbol, and symbol with art, and art with science, you will get a square. The square in the diamond. The old romantic medieval Chinese used to say you can always tell a real Taoist because they have square pupils in their eyes. In other words, when they look and they see compositionally. They don't just see nature, but they see magically. They see the structure of nature. It's one thing to be able to see nature as it is. That is amazing enough, and all the myths are right. That's it. But there's something else, phantasmally beyond being able to see things as they are, being able to see the structure of things as they could be in their entirety, in their continuity. When one looks with the eyes of a calculus, one can see what this would be in all of its possibilities, not just what it is currently. That is very powerful. that is the essence of the magical eye, and it is also the beginnings of mathematical mind. That's very powerful. So you have here, you have a square, and each of these four elements or vortices, notice the kind of metaphorical symbolic language that comes out. Each of these four vortices of this square are in fact what we would call stages. So that, for instance, under ritual, I put in mask. We'll turn the tapes over.